Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Hello and welcome to Alive to Thrive. That was Cult of Personality by Living Color. That's not a song I would normally have played on Alive to Thrive, but my guest today suggested it, and I'm open to new ideas, and I love that my guest suggests things outside of the box, and that is like a very interesting video. You can watch it and think about it. The words are very interesting. So welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. We're wrapping up chilly month here in the Midwest in Missouri. Want to welcome Travis Sheridan. You know, he has an interesting bio. He says he's a born hustler. Again, not something you would think about a guest that would be on my show, but his background includes a very diverse background from military service to stand-up comedy and startup consulting. He's driven, and no matter what his job title is, he's hustling, which is just another way of saying innovative thinking. He says innovation is the best path to healing, and there's never been a greater need for healing and innovation right now, not only in the Midwest, but in the United States. He runs something called the Venture Cafe here in St. Louis. We're going to be talking about that. He has attracted, they've attracted over 20,000 people in 1 year. That's just insane. And they run weekly events on Thursdays. So, you know, he thinks really big. And I've been so inspired by hearing him speak. I met him at the Beyond the Best event in St. Charles last fall. Welcome, Travis, to Alive to Thrive. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. So thanks for making time for us. I know you're juggling about 20 projects at any given time. And what are you currently working on now at the Venture Cafe?
Well, we just recently announced the launch of a new festival we're going to do in partnership with Brian Cohen, who is one of the co-founders of Lufest here in St. Louis, as well as Dennis Lauer, who is the president and CEO of Cortex. And it's called the Murmuration Festival. Murmuration is a really cool word. It actually is the pattern that birds make when they are flying, you know, in unison and in sequence together. And so
the whole festival
is about people being together in a constant movement. And it'll be a combination of science and technology, art and music all together. That's in September.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have an exact date for that yet?
Yeah, it's September 25th through 27th, I believe. I think that is the time frame.
And do you know where that will be held?
It's going to be held within the Cortex Innovation Community, so near Forest Park Avenue and Boyle. And more information can be found I'm sorry, the dates are September 20th. Yeah, let me correct that. September 23rd through 25th. There we go.
Okay, so,
sorry about
so
that.
It's going to be an entire weekend festival. And
it is,
St. Louis
yeah.
is known for some really great festivals, the International Festival and Earth Day and just some really big events. And there's so many best-kept secrets to St. Louis. Now, you moved here, what, a couple of years ago from California?
It was 4 years. Yeah, 4 years ago in January.
4 years ago. And so what brought you to St. Louis from California?
Well, you mentioned best kept secret, and I think that is really what I was let in on the secret, and I had to jump ship and move to the Midwest. My wife is a librarian by profession, and the California economy was just being really rough to librarians or to libraries and librarians at the state level. They had cut 100% of the state funding to libraries, and if you use a state budget as a predictor or a crystal ball. They cut funding to libraries, but increased funding for law enforcement and prisons. And so we kind of knew where the priorities were, and it wasn't in literacy or education. And so we started looking around the country, and in reality, the top three cities were Chicago, Philadelphia, and Austin. That's where we thought we would land, in one of those. But my wife is a St. Louis native, grew up in the West County area, swore, like many young people when she left, that she would never come back. And we visited in November of 2012 just to we were planning on getting married. She was just my girlfriend at the time. And I thought, well, I should at least be the old-fashioned guy that I am, ask her parents' permission to marry their daughter. And we came out here for 3 days, and I fell in love with St. Louis, and she re-fell in love with St. Louis. It had changed in the 7 years that she had been gone. It had changed, mm-hmm. and she had changed. The city had grown up. She had grown up, and my eyes were open to this best-kept secret. Part of it had to do with the wonderful amenities we have here in St. Louis, like all the amenities at Forest Park, our theaters, our museums, the cool place like City Museum, the wonderful downtown in St. Charles, and all this. It just felt like everything that I ever needed was here in this metropolitan area. And so in January of 2012, we packed up a truck and moved out here without jobs. It was better to be unemployed in St. Louis than gainfully employed in California.
Well, my story is similar, except I came from the East Coast instead of the West Coast, and
okay.
I totally had underrated Missouri or the Midwest. I thought never in a million years would I live in the heartland, and, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised over the last 12 years, and I, too, have fallen in love with the area, you know, with the incredible museums and one of the top-notch symphonies that we have
mm-hmm.
here, and the arts and the culture, and now the innovation and technology. And Mish Hancock was speaking yesterday at the Chamber of Commerce event in St. Charles, and she touched upon this too. But talk to us about the innovation coming out of St. Louis and what is happening here, because it's becoming a hub and it's becoming known for new businesses and startups.
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of different reasons why. I mean, I think the first reason is that talent is scarce everywhere across the United States, and we have a younger population across the United States, the millennial population, that are getting to that age in life where the big cities are becoming less appealing. They want the big city amenities, but they want some of the small town ease. And so I think a lot of Midwestern cities are very appealing to that age cohort. So that's an age cohort, and doesn't necessarily mean anything about innovation, except for the fact that a lot of them are bringing ideas that they've seen in other places back to this new space in the Midwest. And that new way of thinking, I think, is driving innovation. We have our established companies here in St. Louis, like Boeing and MasterCard and Express Scripts, all of these big companies that are now looking to be much more innovative. In fact, a lot of them, they've been innovative for a long time, now they are actually establishing innovation units or teams of innovation employees and locating them maybe off campus. So maybe they're not at the Boeing campus, but they might be located in a satellite campus here in the Cortex Innovation Community. And they see the value in these, what I call serendipitous collisions. You know, you can innovate if you're around your own people, but you can innovate more if you're around different ways of thinking. And that's, I think, what is really appealing about St. Louis is we have so many different, a variety of thought processes and people from different walks of life. When we get them all together, magic just starts to happen.
I love that. I love that, and I love the phraseology you use. And one of the other phraseology of terms that you've kind of coined was boo-storming. That's not to be confused with tailgating, but what is boo-storming?
So boo-storming is something I created about 7 years ago now, and I think at last count it's in about eight different communities, or there's eight different chapters around the United States that are doing boo-storming. I'll tell you how it started, and then that will describe what it is. I was sitting in seven years ago, I was in the backyard in California with some buddies of mine. It was me and three other guys, so just four of us, early 30s or mid-30s at that point, thinking about a particular industry that we were all involved in, which was the advertising industry. And we were drinking good scotch and just having a very thoughtful conversation about the changes in our industry and what that might mean for the present time and also the future and how all of us might want to respond to that. And I stopped and paused for a moment, and I looked around and I thought, you know, these are four guys who aren't talking about sports, aren't talking about chasing skirts, aren't talking about cars. We are having a very meaningful conversation about something that's important to us. And my academic background is in organizational psychology, and so I always like processes. And I thought, how can I replicate this? And because I have a bit of a marketing background, we came up with the name boo-storming. And so now it's these structured conversations I have on a monthly basis. My wife and I host them at our home in Old North St. Louis. And people come in, they write a question or topic down on a bar nap, put it in a bowl, fix themselves a cocktail, and we sit in a circle and I facilitate a conversation. I draw one or two of the napkins out for us to discuss, and they could be broad things, you know, trying to solve global issues, and it can be very micro about trying to solve something that's specific to a person's job or industry or neighborhood. And it's just become this really cool way to bring people together from a diverse background and work toward a common solution. I'm a big fan of TED Talks. And I think the challenge that I have with TED sometimes is it's all about the ideas. And I think ideas are important because that fuels creativity. And boo-storming is much more about the action. And it's a good reason to have a cocktail on a Monday afternoon.
There you go. There you go. And so it's sort of like what Gertrude Stein did in Paris with the salons, bringing
Absolutely.
People together from various areas that, you know, when they get together, new things happen. And I also like to call it strategic synchronicity, you know, and that I didn't coin that. That was coined by an author of a book called Attracting Perfect Customers, which, you know, I do think that people gravitate towards each other that are like-minded. You know, when I moved here and I didn't know anyone and I had to build my network from the ground up, and I had lived in places like Washington, D.C. and Denver, Colorado, and places that, let's face it, were a little bit more progressive than what I thought
Sure.
of when I thought of Missouri. But there are people out there doing incredible things, and not many people know we have a World Trade Center here in St. Louis, and there's
mm-hmm.
an incredible international culture here with many, many people from various cultural backgrounds, and then lifestyles and diversity. And I love that you embrace diversity. And so how can we move that those conversations that are happening in the hub of St. Louis to the more rural areas around the state and the areas that, you know, really, let's face it, need these kinds of mind-blasting conversations to think about new solutions and not go back to the same old tired ways of doing things?
Well, I think one of the challenges when you move from urban core out to the rural parts of a region, the more rural you get, the more homogenous you get, right? The more like-minded and similar. And so it's very difficult to infuse the idea of difference when there is no difference to be modeled, right? So if you are out in some of the rural areas, you have families and extended families that maybe have just grown up around each other. People might not have left, maybe never have left home or have left their hometown. And so you know, if you've never experienced anything different, it's hard for you to imagine something different. I think the beauty that happens within an urban core or even within a metropolitan area is there are people that are there from various walks of life. And so when they come in from a walk of life, they're going to bring an idea or a concept that might be new. I ran a program out in California called the Boomerang Project, which was we wanted to attract back, I was in Fresno, California, we wanted to attract back what we called our best and brightest sons and daughters. And so in every community, there are three types of people. There are legacies, there are pioneers, and there are boomerangs. The legacies are the people that are born and raised and have never left, and they're very important for kind of that institutional knowledge and the consistency. You have the pioneers, which I guess are a transplant, somebody that is not from the area but decides to locate there. And then you have the boomerangs, people that were there, they left, maybe even as short as doing a study abroad for a year and then came back. And so if you really want to infuse a lot of new thought processes, the legacies have to be comfortable and actually engage the pioneers and the boomerangs. If you don't engage the pioneers and the boomerangs, you will only think about the things that you've always known. And so I think you have to just be deliberate. You have to deliberately say, there are enough people around this room that know everybody. Let's find a couple of people that don't, that are new, and let's infuse that newness. But that is very risky for people because we like the comfort of similarity and consistency.
And I like that when you spoke at the Streetscape Awards dinner, the Beyond the Best event at Ameristar last fall, that you talked about the path and the path of life and, you know, paths not followed and taking different paths. Expand upon that a little bit and share some of those points here with our listeners.
So it's interesting. I was doing an interview earlier this week with a young lady who's writing a story, and she asked me about my name, and it seemed odd I didn't realize why she was asking that. And I don't think she realized it either, and then we had this epiphany together in the midst of this interview. But my name, the name Travis, actually means from the crossroads. And so I think my mom had a lot of foresight in knowing that I was going to be experimenting with paths most of my life, and that that a lot of times we are always at some point a crossroads in our life. And I think a crossroads can be something major and even something minor. I mean, it's the lunch hour, so I'm at a crossroads of what I want to have for lunch. Nothing earth-shattering there. But when I think about a path that people are on, all too often people spend too much time worrying about not getting lost. They're just afraid of getting lost, and so they will stay on a path that they know because they have this fear of wandering off and possibly getting lost. I read a book a long time ago, and I can't remember the author, but the name of the book was Staying Found. And it's not about leadership or management or transformation in life. It's actually a book on how to use a compass and how to stay found in the wilderness. And when I read that book, I realized that my life and life that I like to live isn't about the fear of getting lost. It's the skill set of staying found, that if you have the right tools, you can go anywhere and stay in the found state. And so the analogy I use is that we are all equipped with our own personal compass. And the way that a compass works is you have to line everything up. And if everything's lined up, you can follow the bearing and stay found. And so for me, the personal compass really is embedded in each one of us. We have our head, our mouth, our heart, and our feet. And this works for both personal life and business life, but the head is the rational side or the thought process, or if it's business, it might be the policy side. And so you have to figure out what that, you know, is there alignment there? Where does that start? The mouth represents the messaging, the words you use. In business, it could be referred to as marketing and marketing communication, but it's the things that you essentially say, and this is both verbal and in social media and on blogs and written pieces. The heart is really about how others feel when they interact with you, how you feel about a situation, and in business, this could be referred to as the customer experience. You know, what's a customer experience when they interact with your brand or your product? And then the most important piece, would be the feet. And the feet can represent two different things. It can represent first your foundation or your true north, because it doesn't matter where you say you're going. Your feet are really wherever you're standing is where you are, and wherever your feet are headed is where you're going. And the way I know this is because if my wife asks me if I'm on my way home from work, I can text her and say yes. My hands could be telling her that I'm on my way home from work. But if my feet haven't gotten up from my desk yet, then I haven't really left my office. The more that you align your foundation and the actions that you take with the experience you want people to have or the way you want people to feel and the words that you choose to use and your thought process, the better you are going to be at staying found. And for me, my true north and my foundation, the foot side, is always around the idea of equality. So if I stand on a platform and a foundation of equality and the direction I'm taking is always toward greater equality, then I have to make sure my heart, my mouth, and my brain are also in alignment with that. And in doing so, I can look at almost any situation to determine if I am staying found in that moment. And again, this works in a personal life, but it also works in business.
Well, you were the first person I had heard in a business setting use the word equality as a value that was different than my background had been working in the women's movement, talking about equal pay for equal work, and then working in the GLBT movement, talking about equality there, and the non-discrimination thing, issues that are facing our state legislature and things like that. But when you talk about equality, you have a very broad perspective of that term. So how do you see equality in business? And then also let's talk about it out in society. But when you use that term that you're committed to equality in business settings, what do you mean by that?
Well, I look at it as I don't believe a lot of things in life have to be a zero-sum game. And I think oftentimes we look at life as a zero-sum game. Somebody is going to win and somebody is going to lose. If I'm a business owner, I want to make the maximum amount of profit from every customer. And if I can do that, then I'm going to be a better business owner. And maybe my loyalties are to my shareholders. My grandfather, when he retired from
Oh, I think we just lost Travis. Hopefully he'll call back. He was on a cell line. And we're talking today with Travis Sheridan. He runs the Venture Cafe here in St. Louis, which has attracted more than 20,000 people last year. And they hold weekly events. Every Thursday afternoon, they have an event where you can go from 3 to 8 p.m., it's open to anyone interested in innovation. And I think we just got him back on the line here. So, Travis, welcome back. You fell off the path there for a moment.
I did fall off the path. But you know what? I knew how to stay found and jump back in.
There you go. You're out in – okay, you were talking about zero sum and you were about to tell a story about your grandfather.
Yeah, so when my grandfather retired from his blue-collar job, he started his own – ice cream route. He got a three-wheel bike and pedaled around the neighborhood and sold ice cream. And he had the cheapest ice cream and least expensive ice cream in town. Good product, least expensive ice cream. And I asked him one time why he doesn't charge more. And he said he'd rather make a lot of nickels than a few dollars. Because if he was making a lot of nickels, then he was able to bring more joy to more people because more young kids got to enjoy ice cream. So he didn't look at maximizing profit all the time, and that really spoke to me. I was in high school at the time, and that really spoke to me. It also made it much more affordable because he never gave the ice cream away to me. I had to buy it, so I'm glad he had the least expensive ice cream so that I could enjoy it. But when I look at business, I see businesses that try to maximize profits, and I often try to instruct new businesses that I work with. And this might be controversial to some, but I tell people to be a capitalist socialist. I want businesses to make as much money as they can, but I want them to have the mindset of trying to figure out how they can give a lot of those profits away or how can they do the most good with the profits that they make. And that means being loyal to more people than just your shareholders, but being loyal to your customer base and being a good business steward and being loyal to the neighborhoods and communities in which you thrive and serve. And being loyal to your employees. You know, in the nonprofit sector, we often refer to nonprofits as community benefit organizations. And if we're really striving for equality in business, then our for-profits should be a community benefit organization as well. An organization, for-profit or nonprofit, should not exist. They can articulate the benefit that they are providing to the community in which they operate. And so when I think about equality, it goes – of course I think about equality when it relates to gender and race and sexual orientation and religious freedom. But a lot of people are talking about that. I look at it more as just a good business practice. You're not trying to run out the little man, and you're not trying to squeeze the most out of your customer. You're trying to make sure that everybody has an opportunity. And it's probably the bleeding heart in me that makes me say that. But, again, I like people to be profitable. Just do good work with that, with the money that you do earn.
And the businesses that are involved in the community, that are philanthropic, and give for the right reasons, I mean, it does help their bottom line. I mean, you look at companies like Ben & Jerry's and Tom's and companies where it's in their DNA, and Facebook, and these companies that have actually, the founders have said they're going to give away all their wealth or a majority of their wealth upon their death, and there's that group of people, business owners, that have gotten together to do that and talk about that. I mean, that is so inspiring, and even small local businesses can do that. I mean, at Butterfly and Moon, my little shop in, you know, on Main Street, St. Charles, I mean, we're a little teeny retail shop. We're not franchised. We don't carry any products made in China. We're not looking to push a lot of, you know, product. We're like you said, we're trying to bring joy to the world, and I love that. That is really part of our mission. But we have a little program where people can donate used jewelry, and that is part of our Dream Uplifter program, where we repurpose that old jewelry and then convert it to scholarships for women going back to college. And so whatever your size business, anybody can come up with something they care about and participate in some small way, whether you're a small business or a larger company. And so I love that you are promoting those values as well. And so what companies have you worked with that you've seen that adoption of values, and or companies that were already doing it before you came to St. Louis? I mean, are you talking about this on your Thursday events or at some of your other meetings you're going to?
Yeah, so there are a couple that come to mind. You mentioned the Tom Shoes and some of those larger brands that aren't necessarily in St. Louis. But I look at a company like Amarin, and they've been great partners with Venture Cafe and helping through sponsorship and support the work that we're doing. But, you know, they see the importance of they're a large player in the St. Louis region, really in the whole Midwest. And they do a lot through giving back of employee hours, making sure that employees have time that they can take off work and participate in volunteer opportunities. And I think that means a lot. I look at some of the various law firms that are in town that do a lot of work on a pro bono side, or providing legal services at no cost to women that are in domestic violence situations and need to get out of that environment. And then I look at our leadership at the nonprofit community here and folks like Better Family Housing and those types of organizations Habitat for Humanity, and seeing that the way that the corporates and the nonprofits work together. Wells Fargo Advisors, I always see them out in their red shirts doing the community-based work as an organization. And sometimes they do it because they know it's good public relations, and I'm not going to fault them for that because it is good public relations, right? They are relating to the public in a better way. It's exactly what they're supposed to do. But they are being good business stewards, and I think that as they are trying to attract a younger demographic, either as a customer or a younger demographic as employees. You know, a lot of the younger folks in our communities, the millennials that are now and the generation to follow them, are looking for the place where they know that they're not compromising their own ideals and values by going to work for a certain company, that they want their personal values and their professional values to be in alignment. And so these companies, a lot of the startups that are launching and growing are being run by millennials. And they are growing businesses that have philanthropy and corporate citizenship as part of their DNA from day one, because that's just how they are wired and what they're expecting in the future.
Wow, that is so great. And you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, I think a lot of the Fortune 500 and Fortune 100 companies have, you know, getting back to policies of equality and acceptance. And yet the political leaders don't seem to be in line with the business leaders in terms where the current thinking is on acceptance and those kinds of things. So, I mean, where do you see that intersection between politics and business and bringing some of that innovation to the capital city of any state, of our state, in any state?
Well, I think when it comes to social issues, social justice issues, both in business and even in the municipalities and in the government side, I still think it's very easy to polish a veneer and not do a lot to really create systemic change. And that's because systemic change usually takes longer than anybody's election cycle, right, or a term limit. And I think that that's one of the flaws in some of our political systems, is that everybody is always running for something, campaigning for something, and they never have the time to actually do the work or fulfill the vision or make good on the promises they made during the campaign. And we see this all the way from probably from school board elections up through the president of the United States. Everybody's always campaigning. And what I'd like to see is, and I see it pretty often, is let's recognize, while we know the system is broken, let's recognize the assets that really do exist. So I tend to be more of an asset-based person than a deficit-based person. And I know that there are deficits within politics, but there are also some assets. And I figure the more we identify and accentuate the assets, the more that people want to do those things, and the deficits get diminished a little bit. And so some of the things that I see as assets is that even in the city of St. Louis, the city of St. Louis as a municipality does a lot of things that are innovative, or does things that are innovative. I won't use the word a lot, but they do things that are innovative from maybe a planning standpoint, an urban planning standpoint, or trying to get more people to ride the Metrolink and infuse more innovation in public transportation, or how they're trying to deal with the homeless during the cold weather. They're trying to do some things that are innovative, but they don't use they don't use innovation terminology, right? They just do it as part of business as usual. And so one of the things that we do on Thursday nights when we bring people together during Venture Cafe is we have conversations and view things through the lens of innovation. We had a great discussion in the field of education that said, what if we viewed charter schools as startups? Like, what are the elements of a startup that are similar to the elements of a charter school? And so that people can look at charter schools and know that if it is a startup, it might not be successful on day one, or it's going to have some struggles, or it's going to have some challenges in the growth of it, because that's what a startup has. When we expect success right off the bat, then we're setting everybody up for failure. And when we do that, we don't allow people to talk about or ask for help when they might need help. And that's one of the things I think is still a challenge here in the Midwest, is that we are very polite. It's that Midwestern hospitality. We don't like to talk ill of people, which means we generally don't talk about failures. And I think that we need to become more and more comfortable with the failures that we do have. We need to voice them. And that could be at the political level, the business level, or even the individual level. We need to become more comfortable with failures so that we can learn from those and grow in that situation.
Oh, that is so good. Wow. So have you ever thought about either running for office or writing a book with some of your thoughts? Those are two different concepts, but let's talk about running for office. I mean, seriously, we need more people like you in elected office.
So I think about it a lot, to the point that I will never do it. And that's mainly because the cop-out is for me to say, well, you know, I feel like I could do more outside of an elected position than I can within an elected position. That's like probably the cop-out answer, but I also believe that a little bit. The second piece is I think that the process is way too ugly. You know, I'm sure people, if they wanted to do enough digging, could find skeletons that in my closet that I don't really want to deal with or talk about or make public, because we've all have some sort of skeleton somewhere. And as minor as it might be, once it's viewed through the lens of politics, it becomes very major. And I think that that's petty. I think that that keeps a lot of really good people who have not lived pristine lives out of running for public office. And the second piece is, you know, as human beings, we are scrutinized enough. I mean, we see that on social media all the time. And I think that and I have a pretty thick skin and I can handle some scrutiny, and I do handle scrutiny regularly. But when you run for public office, or when you're in a public office, it's not just people scrutinizing you, but then they start scrutinizing your family and your extended family. And I just think that, again, it's petty and it's not fair. So as much as I would love to be a public servant, the way that I do that now is by serving on boards for nonprofits or volunteering or something along those lines, serving on committees. That might help the public good or help municipal organizations. But running for office is just probably not in my cards.
Well, you have certainly done a lot in the few years you've been here, you've already been named one of the top 100 people to know in business. I love what you call that, the 100 under 100, and one of the 50 beyond the best named by Streetscape magazine. But you're also often in the media, you're on the radio and in magazines. Tell us about your radio show on KMOX, AM 1120.
Yeah, so about 2 years ago, I started having conversations with KMOX. They were they knew that this innovation scene was starting to grow, and they wanted a way to tap into that and really get connected to it. And so I pitched them along with Michael Calhoun, who is a reporter for KMOX, a really great guy. First, Michael and I had lunch. We kind of worked out the concept of the show, and then we pitched it to management, and they liked it. And really, it's called Nothing Impossible. It airs on AM 1120 every Sunday at noon. And our focus is on, I won't call it just cheerleading, but we are identifying and telling the stories of people that are doing good things in St. Louis. And the name of the show, Nothing Impossible, is actually pretty interesting. It was the slogan for the 1904 World's Fair. And in our doing our research and trying to come up with a name for a show, when Michael found that, and he just happened on it, he was at an antique shop and saw a map for the 1904 World's Fair, and in the corner of the map was this slogan, Nothing Impossible, and he took a picture and texted it to me, and he said, I think we found a title for our show, and I was sold right away, because I think we look at the way that we want to change as a region. And if we look at it in a pessimistic lens, we feel like it's just audacious and there's no way we can do it. But as we are bringing more and more of these people involved in innovation across various sectors onto the show, we're allowing them to tell their story and identify and really help people understand that nothing is impossible, that as a region, we have a lot of strengths and a lot of assets, and that it's been great doing it. I have a lot more respect for people that do weekly shows. I will tell you that it's a lot of work. So kudos to you for putting this together every week. I didn't realize what I was getting myself into.
That's true, and it has to be a passion. I've done it for like 4 years for no money, but
oh, wow.
I do it because I get to meet interesting people. B, and so there's a selfish reason, but B, mm-hmm. I'm helping to spread good ideas and positive energy and bringing different thought leaders to my audience of friends that want to be exposed to both people locally and nationally that have written books or, you know, public speaking or entertainers, people that challenge the traditional way of thinking, but also people that have overcome adversity and out of tragedy can find a blessing. And so in my case, I survived a car crash that my mother was killed in. But from that car crash, I started, you know, through my rehab and physical therapy, learning about mind, body, spirit. And that sent me on a whole new trajectory of, you know, feeding my spirit and taking better care of my body and, you know, helping other people to realize that tragedy or adversity doesn't have to keep you stuck in a place where you're not growing and changing, and that there's a lesson in everything that we encounter in life, and I totally identify with your path analogy. And so when I heard you speak, I thought, oh my God, this guy speaks my language, you know. And anyway, but the 1904 World Fair, that is also very interesting because we have a book at the store called Beyond the Ice Cream Cone, written by Pam Vaccaro. And, you know, even after, I think it's the 112th anniversary is this year, starting in April, that there's still this World's Fair committee that she serves on, and they still are, you know, keeping that history alive. And of course, we have some of the buildings still standing here. But it's just fascinating because World's Fairs are not as well known or as talked about as they used to be, where people came together for weeks and months and to share and exchange ideas. But it is happening in places like TED and TEDx. And you mentioned that, and I want to bring that full circle around because we just recently had a TEDx event here in St. Louis and some exciting things being discussed, like bringing an MLS soccer team to St. Louis. And what are your thoughts on that in terms of embracing a new sport, letting go of this whole attachment to football. Everyone was so crushed when, you know, we found out football's leaving. You know, I don't really get it, except I know it does have a huge positive impact, economic impact on our region. I'm not personally a sports fan in that regard, but talk to me about what your thoughts are about, you know, this new direction we might be going in with soccer.
Well, it was interesting when the Rams left. There was, you know, the fervor to keep them here, and then they left, and there was this kind of this good riddance, you know, mindset across the region, you know, like, don't let the door hit you in the rear end when you leave kind of thing. People were excited. They said, we don't need football. We have, you know, wonderful baseball and wonderful hockey. And it was short-lived, because then it said, but what about soccer? And it almost reminded me of like a 1980s teen movie where the girl or the guy gets broken up with, and he's like, I'm never going to date again. I'm never going to love again. Football broke my heart. And then all of a sudden, a new suitor comes to the window, which is Major League Soccer. And it's like, that's right. I can love again. Let's get married. I'm not a big sports fan. I do love, I love sports from an energy standpoint. St. Louis has two wonderful sports teams now. My biggest issue with sports has always been the public money that's been invested into sports when we have things like education and law enforcement and libraries and parks that I think can continue, that always need a lot more money. But my understanding with MLS is that it's generally more privately funded, and the thing that I like about MLS is there are fewer concussions, so it's a less dangerous sport than football, and that it's a sport that a lot of children play. And so I think that athletes really still can be good role models. And it's one of the biggest sports where it doesn't matter what your body shape or size is, you can probably still play soccer. And so I like that. I like it from a community standpoint. And my only, you know, hesitation would be is if it takes us off track for other things that we're trying to accomplish in the region, and if it requires too much public financing. Other than that, if it can be publicly financed and thrive, then so be it. I think that would be great.
Awesome. What other dreams do you have for St. Louis? What's your big dream for St. Louis?
So you're
working on several,
Yeah, so I think part of it is a mindset dream, and there's two parts of this mindset. The first one is, the first one has to do with innovation, and it is that more people will begin conversations with these five words. In what ways can we? Like, I really want, if I hear people go into a city hall meeting and say, in what ways can we, you know, fix our schools, repair our streets, empty the trash better? You know, that just means that they know that there's more than one solution to any one challenge. And that means that we're thinking more innovatively. The second mindset piece has to do with external comparisons. I think that because we are in the Midwest, we're always striving to compare ourselves to our idols on the East and West Coast. And I think that what we need to focus on, my dream for St. Louis and for the region, is that we focus on just being a better St. Louis tomorrow than we are today. And that starts with each individual that might be listening to this show or each individual that I get to interact with. You know, that's always my task to them is wake up to be better tomorrow than you are today. And I think about the things that I want to accomplish in my life, and I have probably some lofty dreams, but really it's, regardless of how many days I have left on this planet, if I can wake up every day with the goal of being just incrementally better than I was the day before, then I'm going to be closer to accomplishing those lofty dreams. And as a region, if St. Louis is better incrementally, just incrementally better tomorrow than it is today, then we're going to feed one more person. We're going to have one fewer person in prison. We're going to have one more business that hires one more employee. And I just really like incremental growth. It's not sexy, and it doesn't get headlines, but it's how I tend to live my life. And so I try not to set unrealistic expectations for the things that I do or the tasks that I take on, and I don't have that of my region as well. I just want us to be incrementally better and just continually compare ourselves to ourselves and not to other people.
Awesome. So in what ways can we help our youth improve their mindset? And talk to us about the youth and the Venture Cafe project.
Yeah, so there's a few things that we do with youth, and I always think about the idea from astronomy, the idea of an event horizon. And essentially, event horizon is the point in a black hole where you can no longer see light, like where light gets, everything and light gets sucked into a black hole. And so for our youth, and really the youth and people in poverty, they have a very narrow event horizon, which means they cannot see light usually beyond maybe 2 weeks, because it's a paycheck to paycheck type thing. Like, they're only thinking about the immediacy. And so I think what we need to do for our youth is help them extend their event horizon, and that's by showing them opportunities. And so one of the things that we do at Venture Cafe is we have a boot camp for kids. It's 6th through 12th graders, where they can come in for 10 weeks, and over that 10 weeks, that might be their event horizon. We want to keep them engaged for that 10 weeks. And they come in with an idea, and at the end of the 10 weeks, they get to pitch the idea to a panel of judges and possibly win some money to implement that idea. But they get to move from a light bulb moment to the launch of a business. And the reason we do it from March to May and in the spring is so that when they graduate from this program in May, it coincides with when they're finishing school. So instead of going out and getting a summer job, maybe they can run this business for a summer job. And they're not always high-tech businesses. Some person might be working on a new application for a phone. Some kid might be, but other kids are working on a babysitter service, and somebody else might be working on how to mow everybody's lawn in their neighborhood, and somebody else might work on a way to have better summer camps for kids. So they're high tech and low tech, but I think giving kids more adult opportunities, or giving them an opportunity to start to the point of stripping away their youth, but allowing them to explore and try some things in an environment where it's safe, and that they get some guidance, I think is really helpful. And then the second piece that we're doing for youth is we have this really neat program we're doing this year with St. Louis Public School, where we're going to take K through 12 educators, either teachers, school counselors, paraprofessionals, and actually embed them into startup teams or on corporate innovation teams for the summer. So that for 6 weeks in the summer, if they're a teacher, they can work on an innovation team. It helps bridge the gap between industry and education. And most importantly, that teacher or educator can take that experience, go back to their classroom the next year, and augment their curriculum so that their curriculum and the coursework is more aligned with their experience of industry, so that we're continuing to churn out a workforce. The school districts are churning out a workforce that actually aligns with the needs of industry. And what's been most exciting about that is that seems to make sense if you thought about it for, like, high school teachers and getting kids that are about to graduate ready for careers. But we've had a lot of elementary school teachers that say, I know that I am training in second grade the future workforce. They're going to be in school for another 12 years, but it's important to start this thought process of indoctrinating them and exposing them to innovative thinking, and critical thinking is really what it is, at a very early age. And so we have, I think, over half of our applicants so far, we've received over 200 applications from St. Louis Public School educators. Over half have come from K through 6 teachers.
Wow. Wow. And so how many businesses and how do businesses apply to be one of the sites?
So businesses can, I think we should have a link on our website, venturecafestl.org. Under our program section, there's a link for the businesses there to look at this fellowship program for educators. And if not, there will be in 5 minutes.
Right. And
businesses could also just reach out directly to me via email, which they can find on the website, because we're looking for 50 businesses and to place 50 educators into. And I think right now we have about 35 or 40 lined up.
And these are businesses where they will be, 10 to 20 hours a week?
No, they'll be so during the 6 week window in the summer, they will actually be in the business full time Monday through Thursday. So 8 hours a day, Monday through Thursday. And then on Friday afternoons, all the educators come together as a cohort in the office over at Venture Cafe for professional development and sharing their experiences and learning from each other. So for a six-week window, they would get essentially 32 hours a week from these educators. And the educator is coming in to do a discrete project, right? So maybe the business needs a new training manual written, and an educator knows how to put together a piece of training material, even if they may not know the industry. Or maybe it's a chemistry teacher that goes to work for a bioscience startup to do a discrete bioscience project. It's really going to be cool to see these educators get into these businesses.
Wow, that is so exciting. I cannot believe our hour has almost flown by. I do want to give out your Twitter handle, which is Venture Cafe STL, And again, if you're posting on social media, if you're listening, please reshare this episode, which can be listened to 24/7. It's available right after we close, and use the hashtag VENCAFSTL, and you can reach Travis at Travis, T-R-A-V-I-S, at VENCAF, .org with ideas, questions, or connecting with more information. There is so much information on your website. There is a blog that people can subscribe to, so I really want to encourage people to do that, or listen to Travis on Sundays at noon on KOMOX. Is that program recorded, Travis?
Yeah, so we record in advance. In fact, I was recording just before I jumped on this show today. So we record during the week, and then it's live to tape. So it's a recorded show, and then it's also podcast directly after the episode.
Oh, good. So it is podcast. So if people miss you on Sunday, they can listen to it later. Fantastic.
Yep.
And you know, we didn't even get to talk about storytelling, which was one of the key things I wanted to talk to you about. That was one. That was at the top of my list, circled with a number one. But just real quick, key elements for good storytelling in business and in marketing and in life.
So I think the key elements of storytelling is to choose a structure that works for the audience that you're going to tell a story to. And I could run through these. I'm going to mention these very briefly, but there are three that I really like. You could structure your story as a connect the dots, where you start with incremental pieces, and at the end it displays a beautiful picture. You can tell your story through an apples to oranges comparison, where you take an experience in your life and apply it in another way. So that's the apple to the orange. And then you can tell a story in a what I call the thinking, doing, and impact. What you know, what you do, the behavior that you do, and the impact that you make. And I think the impact side is really, really important. What you want to avoid is a story that's simply once upon a time and a happily ever after, because it's just it becomes much more about you and less about the audience that you're speaking to. And we all understand the hero's journey. You don't need to replicate that. But if you really try to connect with your audience and tell the story, make your experiences apply to their life, I think you're going to be much more successful.
Oh, my goodness. That was unbelievable. And I understand you're keynoting at the UMSL conference coming up on April 21st, the MDMC16. Do you want to give us a little quick plug for that conference, for the digital conference?
Yeah. Perry Drake over at UMSL puts together a wonderful conference. I think this is either the third or the fourth year that they've done it. But I'm happy to be one of the keynotes. I'm kicking off the conference in the morning. And I'll be talking about disruptive innovation as it relates to marketing in the digital space. And, you know, a lot of the things that I'll talk about have to do with things we discussed today, about the role of failure and a lot about authenticity and understanding your path as you're looking to engage and build your audience.
Awesome. And people can learn more about that at umsldigitalconference.com. You can get registered. I think it's only $89 for an entire day. There's some incredible people coming in from all over the United States for this conference, people from Google and Pinterest and Square and Twitter, and I mean just all kinds of people in the technology field, so you can come and learn some new things. And also coming up in, that's April, but in March we're celebrating Women's History Month. We will be having on Alive to Thrive Marie Christine Williams. She survived the Rwandan massacre in 1994. She wrote a book about it called The Dark Side of Human Nature. Recently ran into Marie Christine in St. Charles, and we realized after we started chatting that we were Facebook friends. She's an incredible book, incredible story, and she lives right here in our community, and I think the book's going to be turned into a major motion picture. So we'll be talking with her next month in March. And Connections to Success is doing their tribute launch at the Ritz on March 8th, which is International Women's Day, which is a designation by the United Nations. And my very dear friend Tessa Greenspan will be one of those women honored. But it's a wonderful event to hear some stories of some women that have overcome a lot in their life to make a difference, both big and small, and that's March 8th at the Ritz-Carlton, and you can get tickets at connectionstosuccess.org What's one or two events coming up in the next 30 days, Travis, at Venture Cafe? There's the Thursday event, right, March 3rd?
Yeah, so the Thursday event, which happens 49 times a year, we have just, I think that we are now able to say that we have the largest weekly event for innovators and entrepreneurs anywhere in the world. I was doing some research.
Oh, my God.
There is no other event that gets over 500 people every single week on a regular basis. And so we're very proud about that. And that's really what's keeping us the busiest these days. And so in the next 30 days, we're going to do it a few every week. So I would say, folks, come on out to one of those. I'd love to meet you and chat with you. We do have free beer and wine, which really helps fuel the conversation, but it's mostly about the connections that people make.
And the exact location of that street?
Yeah, so it's at the address is 4240 Duncan Avenue. It's in the Cortex District. So if you're familiar with IKEA in St. Louis, we're just right down the street, just east of IKEA, or just west of IKEA, 4240 Duncan. It's at the corner of Duncan and Boyle on the second floor.
Oh, awesome. And so that, I assume, get there early for the best parking. And can people come, if they don't arrive right at 3, they can drop in at from 5 to 8?
Yes. It's porous between 3 o'clock and 8 o'clock. So you come and go as you please. We have some folks that that don't show up till 6 o'clock, and we have folks that stay the entire 5 hours from 3 to 8. So it's entirely, you get to make it what you want.
Awesome. And last question, and we'll wrap it up. What books are you reading right now?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Or
so,
do you listen
just,
to books online? I mean,
so I listen. I try to do a lot of books on when I take drives, and so I just finished one that I highly recommend. It's called Ready Player One. I unfortunately don't remember the author offhand, but it's a great dystopian novel. I read a lot. Most of the reading I try to do is fiction because I live a lot in the nonfiction world, so I like an escape. But Ready Player One is a great escape of a book, and so I highly recommend it.
Okay, awesome. And you can Google that. Well, thank you so much, Travis, and thank you for being on Alive to Thrive. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Best of luck to you and blessings to you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. We're going to end with one of his favorite songs called Cult of Personality, Living Color.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
The cult of personality, the cult of